From within the shadow of the Golden Circle Cannery, within Cooey of the Swamp in beautiful downtown Northgate, it's the Blabber number 16 on Ratbag Radio. Dave Riley speaking. This episode of the Blabber explores the geography of our opening phrase, from within the shadow of the Golden Circle Cannery. And we use that as an excuse to test walk Ratbag Radio's new recording setup. Our mobile studio, on which this sound tour was recorded, is an MP3 recording device with a mini microphone attached. This rig is small enough to rest in the palm of one hand. So with the dogs on a leash in one paw and our mobile studio in the other, we toured the neighbourhood. In a future edition of the Blabber, we'll translate within Cooey of the Swamp for you. And we'll do that with another circuit of a Northgate locality. But this time, our guide, that's me of course, will walk you to the cannery. Here I am outside my house. It's an interesting house because it didn't exist in its site until about 12 years ago. And you look at the house and say, well, the house is older than that. How come it wasn't here 12 years ago? Well, the reality is that it was a removable house. I bought the house in the next suburb for $500, and it was put on the end back of a truck and carried here and put on stumps, and there you go, a $500 house. Can't argue with that. But this area is being developed a lot through this same sort of approach, which is called dice and slice. Well, slice doesn't always happen, but the dice certainly does. What that means is that various properties are divided, and in whether you had one house, you sneak in a second, so that on the same original property you have two houses where only one existed before. And that's a lot of that is happening around here in Northgate. And as where I'm standing, I can see several houses that have been like that. For instance, the one of my neighbour there, my neighbour at my back, that is a similar activity that was done before we did. And that house there comes from Bishop Island. Put on a barge and carried to the mainland, and Bishop Island's an island in the southern section of Moreton Bay. And it used to function as the post office on Bishop Island. And the poor old Bishop Islanders are now without their post office, one would assume, or they've got another one, and it's now sitting in Northgate, with a young couple making their best in the forms of renovations as they can do to make their house proud. But it's happened a lot around here. Originally, when we moved in here, I think the population of this section was around about 500 homes. It's a little enclave separated from the rest of the world by factories. You may be able to hear the factories in the back of me. Separated from the rest of the world by factories, creeks, and major traffic thoroughfares. So it's a little cut-off, parochial environment. And what's happened is that from the original 500 homes, which most of whom were probably settled in the 1950s, is now about 540, because so many properties have been divided and new houses moved in. Not new houses, but houses pinched from all over Brisbane, put on the backs of trucks and carted into Northgate. I don't think we've lost many houses that way. Much as houses happen that way, they get picked up and moved to one side of an allotment, and then in the new space created, another house is shipped in. But like so many, well, we're not in Brisbane. We are what used to be the periphery at the time of the end of the Second World War, where a whole lot of new housing was laid down. And this is basically a development of a post-1945-47 period. And my house was built in Banyo in 1950, and the backyard we live in now is my partner's mother's house. And that house was built in 1950. So it all comes together. And what's been happening lately, and like so many areas in suburban Australia, process of post-war gentrification. Whereas as I walk along here, I know the various properties where their original owners are now dead. And I know as a consequence of that, the houses have been resold, and usually young couples have come in and sought this out as a cheap end of getting into the house ownership market. At the moment, I'm heading north along my street, and there's a mixed bag of real estate around me, mainly coming from the 1950s, but some of it coming into the 1960s in style. While some houses are on stilts in the traditional style of the Queenslander, half of these properties probably are on ground level or just above the ground level. To get really into the Queenslander style that people recognise so much, you have to go back to the period between the two main wars. And even before this First World War. But the tradition kept on. I pass on putting now. It's built probably 10 feet above the ground. And elsewhere at various levels. What's the vogue now is that if you're on a house built above the ground, the fact that you, as I pointed out, you can move a house from one suburb to the next and relocate it with a new family and a new situation geographically. You can do the same while you're on the one site. You just take the house, and if you say 6 feet above the ground, you take it up to, I don't know what the regulated height is, but you can take it up to a height where you can actually build in underneath. And a lot of properties do that, so that all of a sudden, a one-story house that is on stilts suddenly becomes a two-story house. And there's upstairs and downstairs living. It may seem a good idea, but having lived in a Queenslander like that, the running up and down the stairs all day is not to my satisfaction. Anyway, I've got my dogs. They're walking with me at the present time. Scratch, Millie. And I'm coming to the end of a street. And at the end of a street is a creek. It's now called Cannery Creek. That sound that just started up is guys working in the house behind me, and I know what they're doing. They're removing asbestos sheeting from the house. Now, all the houses around here built in the 50s, including my own, have asbestos sheeting, mostly on the indoors, but some houses in the old fibro shacks have them on the outside as well. And my mother-in-law's house, it's the roof is made up of that material. So that if you start mucking with it, drilling or breaking it, you're in for a bit of trouble as far as the old lungs are concerned. So those guys there are working fully clad with special devices so that they can remove the sheeting from inside the walls. It's a major trap for renovators around Brisbane. They start working on the house and realise, oops, it's asbestos. So that leads to a few problems as to their plans. Anyhow, down at this creek, it's called a creek, but up until 3 years ago it was called Cannery Drain, and that's basically what it looks like. Along each side of a creek is strong, well-entrenched mangroves. And while we are, I suppose, something like 4 or 5 kilometres from Moreton Bay, where I'm standing at the present time, in a creek that's no more than, let's say, 15 metres wide from one side of the mangrove plantation to the other, with water in between and a whole lot of mangrove spines coming up, roots. It's salt. It's salty water. Now, this area here used to be fresh water. In fact, the creek here was a range of little water holes. Until this devastating change was brought about, a series of water holes with their own water lilies and turtles and things like that. But when the cannery was placed here in Northgate in 1947, the cannery used to dump its vegetable and fruit pulp into the creek, and this area here was turned into a cesspool, such that a major campaign by the local residents was generated in the 1950s to try and solve this problem. Because the place, when the wind was coming from the north or east, it used to waft this rotting vegetable petulance over to all the houses. The smell was unbearable, apparently. So one of the solutions, as well as putting the sewage in, is, and as part of another project further down the river when they built the airport, is that they dredged the creek and dropped its table, so to speak, so that a creek that was originally fresh now is salty and is prone to the tides wafting up and down each day. And looking down, I can see all this rubbish in the creek, and I know that since all on the other side of this creek is made up primarily of factories of various natures, I know that they dump a lot of pollutants into the creek, and it's very hard to catch them because all the drains come into the creek. Now, where I'm walking now here is a little grassy verge, and in front of me is a row of trees that have been chopped down. Now, the creek is function as the major drain for the catchment area, which runs around the local high areas. You know, it's probably about 3 kilometres that way to the north, and probably 2 kilometres to the west, and maybe all of another 2 kilometres to the south there. What that means is that all the runoff from all the houses, all the factories, and all the roads comes into this creek. And since there's been a lot of development, there's less open space than there was, particularly since all the major road developments are strongly asphalted, free-lane highways. All that water runs off and it's got to go somewhere. So it comes into this creek. Now that's, you would think looking at it, well, you know, I'm standing at the edge of the creek and it's a full metre and a half down to the water there. Well, it just fills up there and rushes out to Moreton Bay. Unfortunately, when the tide's up, the creek comes up to the brim of this depression here. And when more water runs down, there's nowhere to go, so the whole area floods. I mean, it made good sense ecologically in the past when the area did flood, but it drained into a series of lagoons. Now we've got this straight channel running, what is it running this? Probably east-west, right? We've got the straight channel, but it's not what the sort of nature intended. So what they're going to do, this is why the trees are cut down, is they're going to carve out large sections of the embankment here and create a series of water holes, as the place used to be known before. Not for any ecological reason, but somewhere to dump the water runoff. So they worked out, and the engineers got down here, and they said, oh, well, they worked out the amount of water that's drained in the creek and the mountain that comes down on cubic volumes and so forth. And they said that if we widened the area here, we'd be able to hold more water than is presently the case. They went through a process of considering about 6 options, one of which was to build a big tank under a car park at the local railway station. Hardly a viable thing. Another one was to give all houses and factories in the area water tanks, and it helped that the runoff from the roofs would be collected there and this water would be coming down. But given that water doesn't always necessarily run into your tank and there's a limit capacity to anyone's tank, that's hardly a solution. So this is probably the better one of all the ones they came up with, particularly when I consider that it goes back to the way things were. And you get an idea of why I'm looking to halt. In front of me I have a large section of mangroves. These are the rough leaf mangroves. We've only got one style around here. And at their base is not only all little mango roots coming up, but tendrils and the way mangroves go, and a whole lot of rubbish. But in the water flicking down is the local black duck. There's 2 of them. It's like 2 ducks living in a cesspool. These are the ducks are quite common in the area, in a whole lot of, because there's a lot of creeks here, and there's even quite a few lagoons and water holes. And these ducks have been known to inhabit this area for eons, and are a favourite food and a favourite hunting task of the local indigenous people, the Turrbal people. So actually when the place came to be known, just near here is a place called Nunda, As far as we know from the local, from the traditional dialect, Nunda meant chain of water holes. So that's what we had once. And let's say we're going to get it again, but this time the chain of water holes are going to be a change of salt water holes, which is unfortunate. This is a product of what you get with unrestricted development and the urge to bring people into a area which has had a significant real estate boom. Because where we are located here is not only a residential area, but we're surrounded by factories. And we're surrounded by factories primarily because we're close to Brisbane Airport, we're close to the Port of Brisbane, we're close to the railway line, and we're close to the major north-south road. So what better way to locate yourself than ready to actually for distribution networks like that? This is one of the reasons why the cannery was first. That this is why the cannery was put on this site. So I'm moving along here, past where these trees have been chopped back, and I know that in a few months' time there'll be a big hole here where the water is supposed to gather, and I come to the footbridge across the creek. Now usually, but not today, since it's getting cool, on a big rock sitting over one of the drains that runs in the creek is a water dragon who usually suns himself this time of day, or most days. He comes too close, not that he's ever that concerned, he jumps into the water and swims away. But I think he's gone sleepy bye-byes for the colder weather. Although, you know, a lot of lizards are still pretty active around time because it's been quite warm. Now, I'm a bit concerned about the little family of water dragons that live on this section of the creek here, because when they start digging, where are they going to go? I hope they have enough sense to head downstream. My guess is they probably live on detritus and the offal bits and pieces that come down the drain, so I don't think they're going to stop in a hurry. I'm crossing the bridge, and we get exposed to one of our first factory areas. Yes, the local dogs. Why pay for security when you can have a mean dog running around your factory area to stop the burglars getting in? And that one over there is particularly mean. That's why I lock him up during the daytime in a small section. Then you have the roam of the property at night. That's a galvanizing plant to the left, and a vanity, making bathroom vanities on the right. Over there, they make drainage grills. And here, now there's a large thing here which has been divided up into several warehouses and factories, but that used to be the Nanda Spaghetti Factory. Until, I think it was taken over by Nestles, and the Nanda sign was taken down and Nestle got put up there, and nothing happened after some obviously restructuring in the company. So that now it's like a sort of emporium of factories. Hollyoaks being divided up into various sections and various properties are taken up. Ooh, they moved a bit of land up there. I mean, you can hear this noise up there because further down that street there, and to one side is a metal recycling yard. And so there were old car bodies and tin cans and pieces of furniture are crushed into little pads and generated into some form of recycling. On a quiet day, particularly if they're working on Saturdays, you can hear them at our place. The chomp, chomp, chomp as the big machines do their work. On my left is a Sonitron. Let's see, this is what problems our cleaning products, specialty chemicals, cleaning chemicals, cleaning equipment, brolly and carpet fabric protection, mats and matting, flood and fire restoration products. Imagine the chemical concoctions that can come out of that place. Yes. Oh, I spilled some on the floor. I don't think in a rush order. Think of the creek. And here, this factory has been renovated since I was last along here. I call it a factory. and it's Bailey Manufacturing. And I know what Bailey Manufacturing do. They make billiard tables. Yes. The last resort of the craftsman is the billiard table. And just as I'm turning the corner here to head off to the cannery, I know that Bailey Billiard Table's owner used to park his Carmen Gear car here. So I don't know how many games of snooker you have to play to win that sort of income, but I think he's done quite well from the manufacture of same. And then we come here to Earnshaw Road, and directly opposite is the Golden Circle Cannery, which takes up a good section of the local area here. The sign out the front says, Live Store, Circle Cafe, Theatre Tours. I have not actually been on a theatre tour all the time that I've been here. But they have a little shop there where you can buy a lot of cheap groceries or offcuts or things that didn't get labelled property from the factory. So it's not bad to visit occasionally. A lot of people come from all over just to fill up their cars with their juices or tinned fruits and so forth. But the Golden Circle Cannery was established here in 1947, and contrary to what you'd think, it's a cooperative. It's a pineapple growers cooperative who run the board, but of course it's run along strict corporate lines. And as you'd recognise, it has a monopoly of pineapple processing here in Australia. Although most people probably associate Golden Circle with beetroot, because their beetroot brand is quite popular. Apparently even doing a big turnover in Singapore. So that's Golden Circle, where anyone in their late teens or early 20s who are looking for a job used to come out here and work casual, because this was a major employer for casual workers here in Brisbane. What's happened over the time is, since then, over the last 20 to 30 years, the workforce has tended to become maybe, well, I don't know what the arrangements are, permanent part-time, permanent casual. And it's been made up more and more of migrant labour, Malays, Indians, Vietnamese, who come each day to work on a railway line, which is the railway line actually comes into Golden Circle. You'd be on the local railway stations, you know, at Golden Circle having a shipment, because by your nose goes a load full of oranges or apples in the goods cars. It's an interesting place. Coffee isn't bad, a little coffee restaurant there. And I suppose people actually come to Brisbane and say, where we go today? Oh, we go to Golden Circle. Well, there you have it, it's there.
Well, that's your lot for today. You can contact Ratbag Radio by sending an email to our new email address, ratbagradio@gmail.com. That's ratbagradio@gmail.com. Or by sending us an audio commentary. Just go to the Ratbag Radio webpage and click on the audio link to say your piece. We'd love to hear from you. And you'll find us on the web at ratbagradio.blogspot.com. That's ratbagradio.blogspot.com, where you'll find show notes and some photographs to accompany this edition of The Blather. And don't forget that the best way to keep getting what we have to offer is to subscribe to our podcast feed. Anyway, this is Ratbag Radio, keeping an ear out for you.